Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Stuart Thompson. Welcome to Personal Transformation. I'm broadcasting live from the Gatehouse at 3101 Lakeshore Boulevard West in Toronto, Ontario, or Old Etobicoke, as I always say. Well, welcome to, I guess you might as well call it the Christmas edition of Personal Transformation. Well, my theme tonight is you have a right to be safe, and this is the time of the year. Well, it's really hard on a lot of people, but I'm going to have Paul going to be joining me here in a little bit, and we're going to talk about what happened throughout the year here at the Gatehouse, and we're also going to talk a little bit about through the holidays, and I'm also going to talk about personal transformation from my perspective as well, how I've grown and how I've not grown, and for you other survivors that are out there that might be listening, you'll know that I can get it. You'll know that I get it, just like you get me, and this is the beautiful thing about our community and sharing what we're going through and what we're thinking, what we're feeling, and where we're going or where we're not going in our own personal growth, in our healing. So there's lots of things to talk about, and I am really, really grateful to be here. First off, I would really encourage you that if you are feeling triggered at all anyway, well, right off the hop, if you're not from Canada, well, you can go on and you can call Rain. There's an 800 number, which I should have here in front of me, which I don't, but you can go online, you can get that as well. There's a USA and Canada number, but right here in the greater Toronto area where I'm broadcasting live now at the Gatehouse, if you, downtown Toronto, at 416-929-5200, that's the Gerstein Center. And we also have St. Elizabeth at York and Etobicoke at 416-498-0043. And if you are in the West End, Peel Mobile Crisis at 905-278-9036. And if you are in the York region, which is north and east from here, at 905-310-2673. And further down the Eastern Corridor, or the 401, heading towards Ottawa, Montreal, there's an 800 number which you can call anywhere across Canada at 1-800-742-1890. And again, there's a 24-hour distress line in Toronto you can call at 416-408-4357. Let me point out one more thing. First off, I am neither a therapist nor a psychologist or anything of the sort. I'm only here offering my own experiences through my own recovery of childhood sexual abuse. And I'm also, I'm here only at a peer level, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And so therefore, when I'm talking about things, I'll never say you should or shouldn't. It's usually I, and I may recommend you try something, but it's totally up to you to do it. And I'm not telling you what you should or shouldn't be doing. I'm hoping that we can kind of feed off one another. And if you choose to tweet back to me, like I am on Twitter, for example, at Got to Get Out of It, Unforgiven Warrior, for example, or I'm on Facebook at Personal Transformation. I would appreciate any feedback that you wish to throw my way, whether it be good or bad. And it's all part of my growth and also the growth of this show. And amazingly, I'm over 2 years now doing this, and I'm still doing it. And thank you to my listeners that are out there. I keep getting good feedback and encouragement to keep on doing what I'm doing. So I am grateful for my listeners that are listening and ones that have given me feedback. But here we are. It's the Christmas edition. And, well, it's been a very, very, well, it's been a busy year, if I may say so. The Gatehouse has had an awful lot going on, and we've had a lot of people come through the house, and our numbers are up. That's a good thing and a bad thing. Meaning the good part of it is that people are coming out and they're actually, you know, wanting to come out and talk about this childhood sexual abuse that they've been plagued with all their lives. And, you know, people coming here and finding a venue that they can feel safe talking about it. And, I mean, that's exactly where I'm coming from. And most people I've talked to, it's funny. I was just talking with somebody earlier this evening, and we were talking about, well, I can come in here to the Gatehouse and I can talk about stuff that I was thinking and feeling. And it's kind of nice that when I talk to them here at the Gatehouse is that actually somebody can relate to what I'm talking about. And I don't have to explain myself, especially if I'm having anxiety about something, about what I'm feeling or thinking, and they totally get it. So it's kind of know, it's kind of, you know, it's real in all ways that, you know, that I'm able to, well, exercise my voice, for example, whereas I never was able to do that until I came to the Gatehouse. And that has positively been my, well, obviously it's been part of my healing. Being able to speak about what I've gone through and what it's, you know, both the good and the bad. And like I say, it's been a very interesting year here at the Gatehouse. And I know starting from last year, right around this time and going into the new year, I know we were, that we were very, very busy. We have lots of groups going on. For example, now, like tonight, we have two phase two groups that are going on here tonight. Now, these phase two groups are co-ed groups. Now, that's incredible. We will have both men and women, and it's at a peer level, peer support level. And we have two facilitators that are in the group, and everybody's feeding off one another. And of course, as I've explained before, through the 16-week process of the phase two program, well, each night, as in the phase one programs, we have a structured topic. So I have no idea what these guys are talking about here tonight, but they're in here, and I'm sure they're going to be talking a little bit about what I'm going to be talking about tonight, and that's about feeling safe through the Christmas holidays. Well, there's so many pressures that are out there, you know, everything from your job, you know, your family being the biggest thing, and even if you don't have a family, it can be really, really hard pressure on you as well, and a person needs to consider these things. You know, or rather acknowledge these things, I should say, about themselves. And if you're aware, and that's half the battle. Like, I mean, I know for myself, like, well, I was just explaining to the ED of the house here tonight, you know, I'm very aware of these things, what I'm thinking and feeling, but like Christmas and my birthday, from my past abuse that I had received has made me, well, I have a lot of intrusive thoughts when it comes to Christmas and to my birthday. And let me be more clear about what I'm talking about so you understand, and I'm sure others will relate to it as well that are listening, is that as a child, and let me be very, very clear as I go on a little bit further on this, okay, now this is what I would consider to be an intrusive thought, because here I am as an adult, I'm in my middle 50s, and as a child, continuing on, I always felt that I never deserved it. And what it stems from is from when I was abused. Because a few times I've had some Christmases where I was abused right at Christmas time. So therefore, including my birthday as well, and always thinking that, well, I never deserved anything as a child, right? And the same thing with my birthday. I didn't deserve, well, what happens to your child. I'm not saying, you know, I don't know how this may sound. But anyway, I didn't feel I was deserving of the gifts that I was receiving. And I didn't feel that I was worthy of it as a child. And as a child, well, I remember really, well, I remember way too much as far as I'm concerned. But I remember thinking and feeling, and I know I've mentioned this before, but I remember one year in particular, for example, I remember at a Christmas, and this was my father's second marriage, and the second wife. She was a lovely, lovely lady, beautiful woman, and she was very, very caring. And even though my younger brother and I were only stepchildren towards her, she was still very caring towards us. But nevertheless, I remember one year she asked me, well, what was wrong? Because I was a very, very sad child. And she couldn't understand, and I couldn't tell her what was going on with me or what was going on. You know, meanwhile, Christmas Eve, for example, one Christmas Eve, I remember it actually happened a couple of Christmas Eves, but there's one of Christmas Eve in particular. I was there, and I remember my perpetrator. I mean, I'm not going to get into crazy details. It's not necessary. But anyway, the fact is that I was violated. So therefore, I was feeling very, very sad, and, you know, as a child, and feeling that I didn't deserve anything. So therefore, I remember my stepmother asking me, well, what's wrong with me? You know, I didn't want any part of it. I basically kept to myself. I stayed in my room, and I was very isolated, and it's kind of odd that I was like that. But nonetheless, that's what was going on with me. And lo and behold, I had Paul coming in here to join me as I was hoping he would. But anyway, folks, just to finish off here quickly as Paul comes on and joins me here, these were intrusive thoughts that I've carried on even to this day in my middle 50s. But anyway, Paul, welcome.
Well, hey, Stuart, how you doing?
Excellent, excellent. So I've got Paul here, and Paul's been on with us before.
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
Paul is...
Bring the coffee.
You usually bring the coffee. Well, maybe I'll get you when you go back out on break.
You know it. You know it.
But Paul, welcome, Paul.
Thank you.
My brother. Explain what you do here at the Gatehouse, Paul.
I am the adult program coordinator, which basically entails just everything. So there's nothing we don't do.
Mm.
But I take care of doing intakes, one-on-ones. My main thing is to place people into groups and make sure that they're ready for the group and just to coordinate all that. And as well, as you know, we're a small staff, so we do everything that we can do. A little bit of everything.
And you do a lot of other responsibility as well, and a lot of people would not see that because obviously they're from the outside, but Paul also takes care of, we have a lot of students coming in here.
That's true. I do that too.
And you, for example, you would do interviews with the students,
right?
To see where they're at and see whether they were capable or had the capacity, for doing, like, for example, doing intakes for participants coming in, both for men and for women.
Mm-hmm.
And then you do a host of other jobs too that Maria put your way on top of that as well.
It's very true.
Does a lot of stuff. He, along with Maria and the rest of the staff, Paul keeps the house running.
We love the house. And, you know, one of my favorite jobs is when it's quiet at night and everybody's left and then I get to clean the house.
Clean the house,
but I enjoy that because I want this house. I want anybody who walks into our house for the house to give them a hug.
Mm.
That's
sure
so
does.
Important. So important. And, you know, you may not see why it gives you a hug, but when you walk in, it just feels homey. It feels good. And, you know, I think that's really important because – you know, we're all a little bit nervous when we first come here.
Oh, absolutely.
And we're all a bit terrified. Some of us are terrified.
Probably a lot of both, right?
And so when you walk in and the atmosphere, the house just gives you a hug, you immediately relax. And I think that's so important. So one of my favorite is putting the house in order and making sure it's going to give you a hug when you walk into the morning.
Oh, well, you'd certainly do a good job at it.
I like that one. So.
Yeah, it's very.
But yes, and I do take care of the students, and I actually quite enjoy that.
Mm.
Today we had orientation for the new students that are coming in for the January semester.
So what college or university are you talking about?
We actually get them from all.
I know
we get
from
Humber,
all, but...
Humber College. Yeah. I think we from
Humber College South,
York,
Humber College North, right?
Yeah, Humber College North and South. We get them from Seneca. We get them from
Seneca
we
College
get them from everywhere.
Yeah,
we York get them from York. We have a student here from York now. Excuse me for one second. Sorry, folks. A little bit of a tickle in the throat there. And where else we got them from? Seneca, right? We've had them from Trios College before.
Yeah.
We've had them, yeah. I really enjoy students that want to get into social work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite a lot of work because we only get them for two semesters.
Yeah.
And by the time you interview them, by the time you give them orientation, and by the time you teach them the skills, you know, their time here is almost gone, but we love it because I got to tell you, we have some students that were placement students 5 years ago that are still here volunteering.
Yes, so, that's right. Absolutely.
You know, it's, I love it. And today we did an orientation. There was, it was wonderful, man. It was wonderful. I had such a great time and wow, Stuart, you wouldn't believe the insightful questions I'm getting from the students.
Can you give some examples without giving,
let me see if I can come up with one.
Or at least one anyway. Just
at least one.
Yeah.
You know, the one of the really insightful questions was they asked, what do you do if someone lies on the on their intake form?
Which we've dealt with before.
We've dealt with it. And that's what we went over. And we also, you know, I also said to them, it's mostly people are lying because they're terrified.
Mm-hmm.
So if we give an open, non-judgmental atmosphere that we have here,
mm-hmm.
many times, if they even were thinking about lying, they talk to us about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can help them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as long as they can come forward and be upfront about it, mm-hmm. anything that's going on, we will always reach out a hand and try to help them in any way we can.
Mm-hmm.
And we do. So, but just that insightful question.
Yeah.
You know, who comes up with that on an orientation day?
Exactly.
I was just blown away.
Mm.
And I thought, wow, this is a good crop. And it was not just the one. I'm trying to think of some other ones, but just one after the other. In fact, I was going to bring them in to, you know, we have to give them practical too.
Yeah.
So show them how the phones work. Show them how our filing system
the log
works and all that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I delayed that for a full hour because we were in such a great discussion.
Mm.
And so I love that.
So it sounds like you really have a really good bunch of students that are coming in here. For
I think they're great. Yeah. We're really blessed with the amount of students we get in here that are really, you know, focused, insightful, you know, and of course we get a couple that think they're just going to skate.
Yeah.
And I love those ones because they start thinking they're just going to skate through the whole thing.
Yeah.
And by the time they leave, if they do, they're working 10 times harder than they ever thought they would be. Mm. And they're enjoying it. And that's the big one. So
That's great. Thank you for sharing that with us. So what did you think of the year of 2016 at the Gatehouse?
Wow. What a great year.
There's an awful lot going on.
Oh,
we were so busy, right?
We had a lot going on.
So is there anything that really is any highlights for you? I mean, there's always highlights. I know that. But I mean, is there anything in particular that you'd like to mention?
Absolutely. I'm going to mention this one because it's long past now and everybody kind of forgets about it.
Mm-hmm.
We had a horrific flood here in April. So bad that we had to move groups down to Humber College. Thank you very much, Humber, for letting us borrow a room.
Humber College South, that is.
And what I want to say is the way that the volunteers and the staff and everybody pulled together and dealt with what was a really horrible thing was amazing. It brought tears to my eyes. We all put in extra effort. The volunteers were mobilized. You know, we all pitched in to get through it, and we did. And that to me shows what a Gatehouse family we have.
Mm. And we're still dealing with the flood, by the way, because we're still waiting for our basement, my new office, my new studio, Maria's office.
I know.
Waiting to get done, and it's been almost, it will be a year, was it March?
April.
Or April.
April. I believe April 16th.
So basically 5 months away, it will be, a year.
Yeah.
So hopefully within the new year, they get this resolved, because I know that, I know I'd like to get back down to the basement. And so we'd like to get the art therapy back down there again.
Yes,
and I know
absolutely.
Maria, you know, and plus we're changing it around. So we're going to have a little bit bigger, more space.
Absolutely. You know, there's always, as we learn in groups and as we learn, no matter what our hardships are, there's always a gift out of it.
Mm.
And you know what? That basin needed to be reorganized. So thank you, universe, because now we've got it torn down and we can build it the way we want, which is going to be more functional. But I remember I came in on the Friday and the Saturday and the Sunday because all the other staff had other things to do and I was off. So I came in to oversee them cleaning up and stuff. And I'm glad I did because
I
saved your radio show. You were going to throw some of that stuff out. I'm hold on. Yeah, you can't do that. We need this.
Yeah.
You know, so that was really great. And I was really glad, and you know, that we got your equipment up and off.
Awesome.
And I don't think you.
I had nothing on the floor.
That was great. Yeah.
It was everything off the floor.
Everything was saved out of your room. Which was good. But I had to supervise to make sure that those guys didn't throw the stuff away.
Yeah.
They didn't realize what they had, right?
Yeah.
And you had some very wonderful native personal items in there.
I do. Yes, I did.
So I'm glad that I grabbed the box and said, no, I'll take care of this.
I'm glad you did because I'm really, really happy you did.
Oh, I know. And I knew what that meant to you. Mm-hmm. We're like brothers. So we know, you know? Mm-hmm. So.
But now talking about the year now, that was very exciting and very inspirational in its own little ways. But now, what do you think about the growth that you saw this year? Now, you've been here 2 years now, right?
Three years now, really. Yeah.
Within the 3 years, I know
staff for two almost,
and
I was here for a year and a bit before that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, what do you think of the growth?
Incredible. I have never seen more people come through the women's side of it than I had ever seen.
That
just blew me away.
Yeah, the women's program we're talking about.
Oh, and we probably doubled our intakes.
Yeah, it was
really incredible.
I'm not too sure the numbers. I know they're up there.
Yeah,
but
I can take a look for them. But I know that they're really up there, especially with the women's group. The men's group wasn't so bad. We've got about the same numbers.
Yeah.
But it blew up. I remember the poor Stephanie, who takes care of the women's programs, just like it seemed that she was always buried in her and trying to figure out how can we get more people through the group and accommodate these people. How can we meet the demand? And I got to tell you, the staff and the volunteers here have the biggest and most generous hearts I've ever met, because they started doing day groups.
Mm-hmm.
They started phoning all those people and say, are you available during the day? Because we can't fit them all in at night.
But
they found a spot. We wanted to heal them. We found a spot for them. That was
so we're doing
incredible.
Like two groups or three groups now in a day?
You know, I believe, I don't know if any has ended yet,
yeah,
but I believe at one time we had at least two, if not three groups going
during
the
day as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because yeah. Paula and Stephanie were doing one.
Yeah. And Maria.
Jada and Maria were doing one. And
yeah.
I think there was one more. There was two, because I remember during the day, a couple of volunteer facilitators.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say their names because
yeah.
they haven't given me permission.
Yeah.
Right? And and they were here too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because in the past, we would typically do the YAC program during the day.
Yes.
And,
on Wednesday.
And since we were lacking participants there,
yeah.
I mean, although I'm sure that's going to change come the new year, but we definitely needed the space and the space in the day to do it because we can't accommodate anybody in the evening anymore because our everything is full.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And going into the new year, it's the same thing again. Like I know the group that I'm starting in the new year. I have a full room as well for what you're saying.
You have an overflow. Give you the big room.
Yeah.
And I have somebody who approached me today begging to come into your
yeah.
group. And I have to say to them, we're too full right now.
Yeah.
Okay. But what I did tell her, if there's any cancellations,
yeah.
I'll get you in there.
Yeah.
So
hopefully that works out.
And if not, I've offered them one-on-ones and
yes.
the drop-in.
Yeah.
Until they can start.
Yeah, that individual is here tonight for drop-in
yeah,
as well.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
that's
yeah,
just,
yeah.
Yeah, which we have our drop-ins now on Thursdays, which yeah. I've talked about. We used to have them on Sundays, but now we have them on Thursday nights.
Which is why you're not getting your coffee at break and
yeah.
be having a chat because I'm running the drop-in.
Yeah.
So tonight.
Michael's running it?
Mike. I asked Michael. He's a
yeah.
wonderful facilitator.
Yeah, great facilitator.
Oh, a wonderful man.
Yeah.
Actually, a wonderful man.
Beautiful man.
Great insight. And as a matter of fact, he was my facilitator when I went through phase one.
Yes.
So there's a real bond there. And
mm-hmm.
Thankfully, he came in for me today because we had to do the student orientation. So I worked late last night, and then I was up at 5:30 to get in here in time to get ready for the student orientation.
Now, let's talk about the drop-in, because I feel people need to know how important this is as another means of support after the fact that you've done it and you've done your – and you've done the programs.
Yes.
So let's talk about the drop-in.
Sure.
Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. We're not limited here, which is really wonderful. We don't have how many times you can go through a group. So a lot of times people will, you know, go through the first time. And as we know, they don't always put, you know, it's hard to put everything into the first time because
yeah.
you're a little freaked out. You're sitting
yeah.
there. It's a different environment when you have both genders there.
Yeah.
But I think it really is just so much for the healing. And so we always tell people, whatever you need to go through, if you need to go through it again, then go through it again. You know, it's not a race for your healing. It's at your pace. But here we go. So not everybody has the luxury of committing to 16 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, they have kids, they have this, they just can't do it.
Yeah.
So this is why it's so important for us to have a drop-in. Because when you finish your groups, where do we go from here?
Yeah, what do you do after that?
What do you do after that?
Yeah.
And usually, I find that a lot of people, including myself, really was like rode that kind of high that, you know, we, you know, felt great and all that. But inevitably, the stuff comes back up. We both know that.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do then?
Mm-hmm.
And then if you don't have something like a drop-in, there's a possibility that you could start to backtrack.
Mm-hmm.
And go into old behavior.
Yeah.
And I've actually had a few people that have called me, and I've had chats with them. And then, you know, we figured out, well, come to the drop-in, right? If you can't commit to the group, come to the drop-in. That's what it's there for. It's ongoing support. And it's a wonderful group because we come in, and it's not as structured as phase two or phase
yeah.
one group because
yeah.
we're not picking the subjects.
Yeah.
The subjects aren't pre-picked for you. So when we come in, I do like I like to do a check-in,
yeah,
and then from the check-in, I see a theme.
Yeah.
We're going to go for there.
Yeah, depending on what they say.
Depending
right?
on what they're saying, right?
Yeah.
So what's coming up for?
And also may I point this out. This is a co-ed too, by the way. This is
yes.
not just one gender
no.
based. It's
no.
co-ed,
yeah.
and it's open to anybody.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter who, what you're from, if you're gay, straight. It doesn't matter.
Oh no, absolutely.
Timbuktu,
yeah,
Timbuktu3, does not matter where you're from.
As we all say.
Yeah.
Right. Childhood sexual abuse.
Has no
boundaries.
Has no boundaries.
It's
absolutely.
Not racial. It's not religion.
No.
It's not monetary.
No.
It's not social standing.
Right.
It gets us all. So
yeah.
we're all there. Absolutely.
Now, let's reflect a little bit back. I know we had our conference.
Yes.
And that was a great success. And now I know that you guys have already started getting ready for the next one for 2017.
Absolutely.
I know you can't really talk a whole lot about it,
but
it's going to be a really exciting one
oh,
this year.
Absolutely.
We have some really, really good guests that are going to be here. And well, I can't say right now. I can't say right now until
okay,
it's confirmed.
We
don't
want to give it away yet.
No, I won't give it away until the new year, until I get an okay from Maria.
Wonderful.
Easy,
yeah.
And which
and then we'll start advertising.
Then we'll start advertising, but I know we have the artist has already started asking people to come and speak.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we have some really good people coming up from the U.S.
Wonderful.
And I'm really, really looking forward to that.
Wonderful. You know, every year, it never ceases to amaze me the amount and dedication of all the people that put into that conference and what comes out of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. It's not just a conference that we sit there and go, yeah. It's a conference that we break into groups, and we write on anybody can write on the board.
Yeah.
And you know, 2 years ago, there was one that said, "Well, maybe we should build a labyrinth."
Yeah.
Okay. And the year or two before that, you know, it'd be nice as a healing garden.
Healing garden, exactly.
And you look out our with great pride. Mm-hmm. I look out beside our house now. We have a beautiful healing garden that not just we're using, but the whole community's
community.
And kids playing in there and doing and walking the labyrinth.
Mm-hmm.
You know how many college students I've seen from Humber walking the labyrinth?
Yeah.
That's really saving them because you can imagine the stress they're going through.
So
it's just incredible. Like from the conference, it's a thought.
Yeah.
And then it appears. So this isn't just a conference where we sit there and go,
We talk about it. We just
this is a doing conference, which is really great. And always great guests, great insights.
Yeah, international.
Oh, my goodness. Remember when Breeza came up from Bolivia?
Yeah, from Bolivia.
Oh, my goodness. And the presentation she put on, I still use that in intakes to tell people about, you know, she went over how, you know, our emotional side of our brains are dead.
Mm-hmm.
After the abuse,
we
start growing emotionally and then went about showing it with MRIs and was like really incredible. And that really helps when even in group when I talk about that because it's one of those aha moments.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm having trouble.
And we start talking about neuroplasticity.
Right.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And mindfulness.
Yes.
And pause. And it all relates to what Paul is talking about.
You know it, man. You know it.
Now,
changing the narrative, right?
Changing the narrative.
Getting
exactly.
rid of the false brain messages, you know? To this day, here's a little personal growth for me this year.
I was going to ask you about that.
Sure.
I was going to ask you to...
Actually,
I'm going to ask you another question, but...
Sure.
I know you only have so much time.
Yeah.
And
for you, I got extra time. And when my ride gets here, I'm sure he won't mind waiting a couple minutes. Not
but,
too much.
But I wanted to get a couple of these things out of the way. And one thing I did want you to touch on, if you wanted to, I'm really glad you said that because I wasn't sure. I should have asked you prior to coming here and coming on. But as I wanted to ask you is about what personal growth you've experienced this year that you wanted to share with somebody, that you wanted to share, and maybe even some of the struggles that you went through. Only provided you were good with that.
You know what I did, right?
Yeah. And I think this is important because other survivors, when they hear this, they'll see, okay, well, yeah, I'm going through stuff right now, and this is what I've done to change this, and this is what I've done to change that, and here I am now.
Okay.
You know? But before we do that, I want to talk to you a little bit more about the students.
I'm going to say one thing.
What's that?
To that, you know me, right? For you, I'll talk about anything, and not just for Stuart, for all of us survivors. I will be an open book, because if that helps just one person, then it's all worth it.
I'm going to do the same thing as well.
All right, so that's about the students.
So now I want to talk a little bit more about students because I know yourself, as like with myself, we've been going to York College or York University, for example.
Yeah.
We've been going to Humber College.
Yeah.
And it seems to be doing more and more of this. Now, I love doing it because they're basically the ones that are going to be running our world afterwards.
You know, if we can tell our stories, if we can help them understand what people are going through.
Yeah.
And when they're out there,
yeah,
they're going to have more empathy, more compassion, and understanding about what goes on.
Now, with the speakings that you've done, like, for example, at York, or you've spoken to Humber as well, too.
Yeah, we both have. Yeah.
So what do you get out of that when you do that? What does it do for you personally?
Wow. That's a great question. You know, I don't often like, and you know, usually I debrief and I reflect.
Oh, yeah. You're very good at doing that.
Yeah, I'm really great at that one. I'm just so blown away because when we're talking, you know, and I don't know if your listeners know the format, we get up, you do a presentation, then we get up and we talk about the gatehouse and we also talk about our personal stories.
Mm.
And when one of us is talking, the other one is always looking at every face in that room.
Mm, that's for sure.
Because remember, folks, it's 1 in 3
yeah,
and 1 in 5. And so if we're in a classroom of 40 students, there are survivors in there. And what we do is we watch and see what the reactions are. And then we know by that person's reaction, we make ourselves available to them, right, to talk. And I got to tell you, what do I get out of this? I get a lot of personal stuff out of this as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, you're sharing a part of you out there. And I think we lose our voices when we are abused as children. And it's so important for me to have my voice and to be able to tell my story to people. So on a personal note, that helps me with my growth. But here's the great part about it, right? On more than one occasion, I sort of linger a little bit afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've even been approached in the bathroom by students that are in the class that say, I need to come and see you guys. And that, my friend, is saving lives.
Yeah.
That, my friend, is what makes it all worthwhile.
Yeah, definitely.
Right? Not only that the other students see it and realize the courageousness of these survivors that are up
great courage.
There, and it moves them into doing things, into not just sitting by, not just being idle. It inspires them to do something like a teddy bear drive
yeah.
and to raise funds. But again, the other side of that is many people have come through our groups that never would have come through at a great young age.
Yeah.
Right? Because we went up and talked.
Mm.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, that's totally amazing.
That's amazing, man.
And it's funny because when I look at statistics, now the reference that I'm going to make or the statistic I'm talking about is a U.S. statistic.
Okay.
Now, through malesurvivor.org,
yeah.
I was looking at their statistics on who comes forward.
Mm-hmm.
And for males, the average age in the U.S. is, believe it or not, is in like 20, it ranges from 24 to 27.
Amazing. They come forward at that young.
That's what it is in the U.S. Now, I don't know what it is here. I don't think it is. Judging from what I see come through the house,
right.
I would say that's not the case at all.
But
there's other agencies as well.
Yes. I want to add something to that because you said something earlier that I wanted to add.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. And this is the amazing part. And also going up and talking at the universities and the colleges.
Yeah.
What has moved me is the age of people coming through for intakes now.
Okay.
It's dropping. Mm-hmm. And that is so amazing because what it means is that we're losing the stigma around it.
That's right.
So as males, we're losing the stigma around it. And as survivors, both.
Now, is that right? Women as well? Sorry to interrupt.
I see it and they look younger, but I don't know because Stephanie takes care of those stats.
Okay.
Right. So I don't know their exact ages, but I'm seeing that in the phase two as well, which
yeah.
I take care of.
Yeah.
So I'm seeing the ones coming from phase one carrying on to phase two are also getting younger. But that's the most amazing feeling because, oh man, in my 20s, I didn't even admit it to myself.
Yeah.
In my 30s, I had the nightmares and woke up and it all came back. But I still suppressed that again into my 50s.
Mm.
So it's all worthwhile. It's all always worthwhile. But it's an amazing, amazing and happy outcome to see the age dropping that people are coming and seeking help.
Mm.
Because that means they got more time after they've healed to enjoy their lives.
Oh, yeah.
And I can tell you, folks, I'm a totally different person than when I walked up here the first time. And what's amazing, if you're okay, do you have more questions on the students?
Well, yeah, just make sure you're saying.
I was going to go and segue into my personal growth this year, which, and we'll talk about it when you ask me the question, but I knew what the show was going to be, and I still came because it's so important.
Mm-hmm.
I went through my healing. I've been a facilitator. I've been one-on-ones, and I still need help for myself.
Yeah.
And I saw that this year.
Yeah.
And the beautiful thing was I didn't ignore it. I went, hey, Paul, you got to practice what you preach, buddy.
Yeah,
absolutely. Right? So I did a lot of reflecting and came up with what I needed help with this year. And I've gotten it. And I believe that I've grown greatly.
Hey, I'm just going to just jump in just for one second. I just wanted to pay acknowledgement to Flower Child. Thank you for pointing that out about, yes, it does need to be brought into the high schools as well. And I know that one of our participants, facilitators, Charmaine, for example, she's been trying to do that for years here
yes.
in Ontario.
Yeah.
It's not a need to go when the schools are going on old beliefs.
Yeah.
And granted, it doesn't help that our government has only mandated a partial, well, at entry level, as far as I'm concerned, a curricular sex ed program, which mm-hmm. they've changed, and child abuse only falls in, you know, slightly,
mm-hmm.
and how it's addressed. And yes, high school is a good place to start, but I honestly believe it should start in public school.
I'm agreeing with and, who was the guy who
wrote it? No, Flower Child was
Flower Child. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Yeah. I think we should go even younger.
Yeah, but in the high schools, as this individual was pointing out, and it's very, very important. And yes, it still should be brought to the high schools, but I believe it should start right from school from day one.
Too.
And there's no way, and no one can tell me that you cannot come up with some kind of a program where it's age appropriate. To talk about this stuff where, you know, so the child understands. I mean, if you can't come up with something, then there's something really wrong.
Well, we got a lot of heads that can come up with something.
A lot of heads are coming up.
And I go to add to that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. My abuse happened when I was 4 years old. When I went into school, it was the 60s. They knew something was wrong with me.
Yeah.
They knew something was wrong with me.
Yeah.
If I had a curriculum where it said, and told me about it's okay to talk about if somebody's doing these things to you, I might have talked about it then. I might have got the help I needed instead of suppressing all the other things in my life for 50 years.
As we were taught to.
Yes. We're men.
Not just from school,
we're
but
men.
From, not just
That's right. We don't show our feelings.
Not just from school, but at home as well.
You know it.
You know, and
be a man. Remember that one?
Yeah.
Be a man.
Yeah,
suck it up.
Suck it up. But that's all changing now. And the examples you gave. In the universities, for example, like I know when I went to university, it was a totally different thing. I know when I went to university, we were protesting a cruise missile.
Right.
We weren't, as an example, I mean, that's I'm trying to age myself, but yes, I am.
Two ladies done it.
But anyway, the point being is that starting this off in school is where this begins. And if you're able to start it off, whether it be in a high school, thank you, Flower Child, or in a public school, which
thank
I really...
Thank you, Charmaine.
And Charmaine, but Charmaine's trying to get it into the school system, period.
Yes.
Public school and high school.
Yes.
Now, the only trouble is we've got too many boards. There's too much politics.
Too many cooks, eh?
Too many cooks in the kitchen, and it really makes it hard to get this stuff done.
Yeah.
But in the new year, I know that this will be talked about a lot more because I know the stigma and all the bad feelings behind this, and the awareness has come to a whole new level. So I know that in the new year, I believe this, what we're talking about, will actually even transpire to even come to
Wouldn't
come
that to be amazing? Yeah.
Now, I'm crossing my fingers that it will, but I honestly believe from what's been going on, what I've been hearing through the grapevine, I can't speak for all across Canada, but I know that in Ontario, that hopefully that there'll be something in place come springtime or by the fall of next year.
Wonderful.
You know,
Isn't
and thanks to like Charmaine for doing such a
and
thing.
All the people that are just behind that and... And you know what? We're not giving up, Stuart. If it isn't this spring, we'll make sure it's the next.
Exactly. But we got to keep fighting at it. And it just, you know, bringing awareness to a whole new level, which it is obviously already, but even more so.
Absolutely. Totally agree with you. It's so important. And I will say this to your listeners and to you, as you know, awareness saves lives.
Oh, it sure does. And and, you know, and I thank you for these comments, Flower Child. Anything from like I know in schools, like, I mean, even a poster, I mean, is better than nothing.
Yes.
To bring awareness, because not all the students are going to want to talk about it. It's kind of like you were talking about. I mean, yes, you know, we talk about us being men and being behind a closet, behind a wall, just because we're men. But being a student is really, really hard, too, because there's all those stigmas behind that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to carry on too much longer about that because we are kind of going on the time.
Yeah.
But I think what I'd love to do now, you wanted to jump into a segue into your own personal growth. And I think this is where we should go now.
All right. Good. Yeah, absolutely. So my abuse was done by a male. It was my uncle. And it went on from when I was 4 to 13 for the sexual abuse. I've always been physically and mentally abused by my mother since day one. And I had I reclaimed some stuff that I had really pushed down deep and about some sexual abuse from her as well. And what I realized this year is that kept coming up for me and that I needed to deal with it. It was hard to admit, but I have mommy issues. And it was a strange one. I'm sure you've talked about inner child.
Yeah.
All right. So I haven't talked to my abusers. My male abuser is dead. My mother, I haven't talked to her in about 25 years or more. And she actually phoned me this year on my birthday. I wouldn't pick it up, right? And when I listened to the message, it was nasty, as always. That nothing more than I expect from her.
Mm-hmm.
But what shocked me is I could almost, because we do inner child work here,
yeah.
So I recognized my inner child was jumping up and down all excited.
Excited in what way do you
excited
mean?
Excited because he thought, Mommy loved me finally. She's phony. He loves me.
Okay.
And I went, whoa, where's that coming from? This is one evil person that's done a lot of harm to us.
Mm.
Whatever the reason she's done it, I forgive, I have some compassion and empathy what brought her to that point of doing all those things.
Mm.
If not, I don't forgive the acts that she
yeah.
did, but I have some empathy and compassion that what in her life brought her to do those really horrible things. But there it was, is that I was like, started getting mad at my inner child. What are you doing, buddy?
What do you mean by mad?
Angry at
angry.
Her. Like, why are you jumping up and down wanting her love? And, of course, the inner child is me as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously, that's in me still. And it's the nurturing that I think my young guy never got and only saw pain and only saw hurt. And I think it's the nurturing that he wanted. But he had feelings for. So I realized, I think I have mommy issues. And so I can say I went and actually practiced what I preach and went and saw Lynn McDonnell.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
You can mention her name.
And Lynn is a wonderful, wonderful
great therapist.
Therapist, man.
Yeah.
And we discovered that together. So my big change for me is recognizing, even after all this time on my healing path, there's more to go. It's never really stopped. You always continue to heal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay to finally admit to myself that I have some deeper stuff, like mommy issues.
Mm-hmm.
Like I really wanted, no matter how badly she abused me, I still wanted her to love me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay to feel that.
Yeah.
And that's what I was trying to shut down. I would shut down when that happened because it's like, how can you even want anything from that woman? Right? So it was a tough one to admit to myself that I had those issues. And, you know, I wanted to be healed.
Yeah.
But this house, Arthur, you, Maria, all the people involved, we self-reflect. And I'm not going to say any swear words on here, but let's just say I don't believe – if I start believing my own bull poopies.
Yeah, bullshit, sorry.
Okay, that so I can say the bullshit? There
yeah.
you go. I don't want to believe my own bullshit. When I start bullshitting myself now,
yeah.
I take a look at it, I self-reflect and go, and I call bullshit on myself.
Yeah.
And that's what I had to do, and that's what I had to say. And, you know, it was the support of Maria,
mm-hmm.
and that's why I went to the therapist, mm-hmm. you know. And it's great. It's great. I mean, I still have issues to work on.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
So what kind of cognitive things have you done to help you through this, if you wouldn't mind sharing?
Yeah, that's a good question. So first thing was admitting it to myself.
Okay.
And recognizing what it is and what it felt like.
Self-acknowledgement.
Exactly.
Without minimizing it.
Without minimizing it. Then I had to deal with the anger I had towards my inner child.
Okay.
And, of course, it's really anger I have towards myself.
Yeah.
Because I felt like how could they want this? How could they want love from this evil woman who's really hurt you? Right?
Yeah.
And then I realized it's the childlike in you, right? Recognize it's the child in you and that most boys want a mommy that loves them.
Mm-hmm.
And when we haven't had that, it's going to come back to us, right? Yeah, there you go. Thank you. Is that to Flower Child?
Yeah.
Great, great comment, Flower Child. You're absolutely right. We leave them with mother hunger.
Yeah.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, exactly.
I have mother hunger.
Yeah.
And so now, and then I got pissed off at my inner child because how dare you have mother hunger? Don't you remember what she did to us?
Yeah.
You know, and again, I'm going to say I'm talking with my inner child, but I'm also talking to myself. And so that was a hard one to admit. And so now cognitively, one of the stuff that I realized that any woman in authority, right, asked me to do something, I might immediately say yes, because it's that whole wanting to be wanting to please mommy.
Please, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of freaking when it's your boss or something, right?
Yeah.
You're like, you know, can you? Yes. without even checking. And so one of the cognitive things I do now is I do a check-in, especially if it's somebody, a woman asking me to do something, a woman in authority.
Can you explain a little more about
that,
please?
Yeah, so I check in. So I sit down and I go, let me get back to you on that. And then I go, I do a little meditation, and then I do a look-in. What's my motivation for saying yes? Is it because I really want to do it, or do I really not want to do it, but I just want to please mommy?
Yeah.
Right? And I'm probably going to do it anyway, but I want to, you know, if it's because I'm trying to please mommy, I have to recognize that and go, that's not healthy for me.
Yeah.
Right? So let's take a look at this and take a step back and sit with it for a while, you know, and just without judgment, and then take another process at it. Is this something I really want to do? Is this, why do I want to do it? You know, and so it doesn't mean that I won't do it if it's, that's the, you know, because it depends on what needs to be done.
Mm.
So I'm talking a little round. Sorry, guys. And that's only because, you know, it's like, if it's something that the house needs, I'm going to do it because I love this house. Right. But what I want to make sure that it's coming from a healthy place. Right. And not the need to be loved by a mother that never loved me.
Mm.
Wow, that's a big one to come out. So,
well, I really appreciate you talking about that.
And just that's the cognitive. That's what Lynn talked about with me, and we're still going through it. And, mm-hmm. you know, after the new year comes, I'm gonna go see her a bunch more times
mm-hmm.
because it's just wonderful to go someplace that's safe and be able to chat. And that's why I love drop-in, because we can do that too. But the difference is when I'm doing a group here, I'm facilitating.
Yeah,
and it's not about me.
Switch the hats.
You got to switch the hats. It's not about me at that point. You know, and same thing when I'm doing drop-in. It's not about me.
Yeah.
Right? Now, if I really want to do that, I'll do a one-on-one with you.
Yeah.
Right? Or with Lynn or with somebody, you know what I mean? Or if I feel it's in a group that'd be good, mm-hmm. then I'll ask somebody to facilitate the drop-in for a few weeks or so I become a participant.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's not fair, I think, for facilitators to have – you not have issues, but to take up the group time with their own healing. Become a participant then.
Here's another tough question for you.
Sure.
So now that you're aware of this.
Okay, wait a minute. This is like four tough questions. And, you know, I think I only paid you. You only paid me for three. I'm kidding. All right. Go ahead. Hit me.
Okay. Now with what you've discovered within yourself and this new sense of awareness. Now, you've got some cognitive tools now that you've been working with. So what do you see moving forward now as far as you being aware and trying to change yourself in a way that you're comfortable with what you're dealing with?
What's the change, right?
What's the change?
I think the change is the cognitive. Because, you know, I often ask this in my groups, especially the phase two groups.
Yeah.
What does healed look like to you?
Yeah.
Right? And healed look like to me is that we went through some horrific stuff, Stuart.
Mm-hmm.
That's never going to go away, right? Stuff is going to continue to come up. It's what tools do we have now when they come up? I'm not afraid anymore of stuff coming up because I refuse to get back to the suppression, right? I refuse not to process the emotions. And that's what the good thing is about it. I'm sorry, what was this? Flower Child says, did you seek a mother in relationships? Have you? Oh, yes, absolutely, man. Oh, my God.
I can relate to that, too.
Oh, my God, Flower Child. Let me tell you, Flower Child. I'm just going to go off book for a second.
Yeah.
I continued to not only get into relationships with my mother, but if they weren't abusive, they weren't my mother. So I only really and I got to admit to people, we're talking, I'm on relationship, serious relationship, like three were marriages and three were common law. I've done number six. And, you know, one was not abusive. Two through five were very, very, very abusive. And I just, if they didn't abuse me, here's something that, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm sharing this, but I actually believe this. And I actually said this. And they actually had tried. If they haven't tried to kill me twice, they don't really love me.
Mm, that's pretty heavy.
That's coming from a very heavy place,
yeah.
Right? So just getting back for a second, thank you for that comment, Flower Child. Just getting back to the whole cognizance, right?
Yeah.
So healed looks like to me, this stuff is going to come up.
Yeah.
But now I process my emotions instead of suppress them. Mm. So it's the same thing with the mommy issues.
Yeah.
Recognition that it is. Recognition that it's coming up. Sit with it. Process it. Right? Don't judge it. That's my processing, right? And seeing where it's coming from. And doing that, it's not that things don't come up anymore. It's that when they come up, I have some incredible new tools that I can use. And therefore, it's not devastating me for months. I'm not going off on old behavior and getting high and just trying to suppress my pain. Now I welcome whatever comes up because I'm not afraid of it anymore. The Gatehouse have given me some beautiful tools, man. And now I just process it.
But you also got to keep in mind, brother, you did the work.
I did the work. And you know what? I had great advice on that from my very first day walking up here for a group. There was a guy named Stuart who I broke down with on the porch. And the best thing that I took away from that was when I remember this. I'm not going to go through the whole thing because you were a hero to me that day, man. And I realize now how much extra you put in and took away from your own time to do it. You're a beautiful man. But I had my head down on the railing of the porch, shaking, going, man, is this ever going to change? Is there a light at the end of the tunnel? And this voice beside me goes, yeah, there is. You just got to do the work, man. Just do the work. And I kept that with me the whole time I went through the phases. Anytime it got tough, anytime that it got uncomfortable, anytime I wasn't in my comfort zone and I was pulled out of it, I did the work because I knew that I was going to have a great result. And that has carried over to now. You asked me the great cognizance I have with what I'm doing.
Yeah.
It's exactly that.
Well, that's great.
It's exactly that, man. You do the work. You put it in. When you're uncomfortable, I push through it and process it. And I've always had incredible outcomes from that. So
now, have you, and I'm really not putting any pressure on you, and nor am I suggesting this, but have you put any...
I love when that starts. That's a great way to start a question.
Have you put any realistic goals for yourself for the new year? Or you don't believe in that stuff?
Well, I don't not believe in it.
Okay.
I think that everybody should have something they're working towards. I'm not goal-oriented anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I have the biggest goal... Here, I'll say it this way. Right? I have the biggest goal of all, and it's to do with this. And you can tell them what I'm showing you.
Yeah.
A painted
pinky.
Pinky.
Yeah.
Right? A pinky. And I've sworn to wear this until there is no more childhood sexual abuse. So that's my goal, eradicating childhood sexual abuse.
Mm.
Right?
Mm.
And helping everybody I can coming through this house to, you know, move past it.
That's fantastic,
yeah,
Paul. You know, you do a lot of wonderful things around here now. And I don't know how often you get that told to you, but you do a lot of beautiful stuff around here. And I really want to thank you for what you do around here.
And thank you for all you do.
You're a huge, huge part of the house, along with all the other beautiful wheels that are in here.
Oh,
the
so
common
many,
wheel.
Man, so many. All working together.
At
a common goal.
Yeah.
Right? To create a safe place where people can find their voice and tell their story.
Exactly.
That's it, man.
Exactly.
We bring it right back. That's what I do. You want a goal for next year?
Mm-hmm.
Bring it right back to the basics of the house.
Mm-hmm.
Continue to create a safe place
mm-hmm.
where people can find their voice and tell their story.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything more beautiful than that?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely nothing. Nothing at all. So how about we switch a role here for a second?
Come
why don't you ask me a question? I know you only have so much time.
That's so fine.
And why don't you ask me a question?
All right. Okay. Let's see now.
And if I yammer on too much, just give me a poke, okay?
That's okay. Yeah, no problem. No problem. All right. Let me think here. All right. Well, let's throw it back to you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Same question?
Same question. What's your personal growth this year? What have you seen come from yourself?
Well, I would say my biggest thing, I mean, aside from, I discovered actually a few things and one of the things I've talked about, this is months back in July when I did the art program.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to do some more work on myself, kind of like what you're talking
mm-hmm.
about, what you did for yourself, because
mm-hmm.
there was something missing. Well, not that there's really anything missing. It's just something that I basically, something I just put aside. You know, something that I've acknowledged, but not really acknowledged. And what I'm talking about is my self-worth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, I mean, yes, and even today, yes, I'm still struggle with it, but...
Mm-hmm.
I have a different perspective now that I've done some work on that. And I had to, well, for myself, I had to really, really look at it really, really deep. Okay, well, I keep saying this to myself, and yet I keep doing all these things. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm not rewriting, I'm not reinventing the wheel here for myself, or I'm not, you know, I'm not building a house. Well, maybe I am inside myself, but I'm basically... I know you got to get that.
Nope, I just turned it to that's my cue, but You're going. Please keep going.
But I had to discover why I was holding on to this.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, lo and behold, I really never really discovered why I was holding on to it other than I acknowledged that it's a comfort zone and I don't really know any better. It's what you call an intrusive thought, mm-hmm. or thoughts. And what stems out of that self-worth thing, it resorts to thinking about suicide,
right.
A suicide ideation for myself. It tells me that when I'm talking to myself, it tells me that, well, when I talk about my self-worth, well, it just means I bash myself, I guess, just to make a long story short. But it helped me realize that. Well, it brought a sense of awareness to me because I was doing it. I was doing it so often. I would do it every day.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I'll have all these good things going around, like good things like what's going on here at the gatehouse,
mm-hmm.
and things like that. But I would never really truly acknowledge. I mean, I acknowledged it, but and don't get me wrong, I certainly never took it for granted, and nor did I fluff it off like it was nothing. Well, it is a big, huge thing. And I mean, if it wasn't a big, huge thing, I certainly wouldn't be here right now. But that really, really impacted me. Here I am, I'm trying to move forward, but in some ways I felt like I was stuck. And that was another way I was feeling stuck, was I keep bashing myself,
mm-hmm.
and bashing myself,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's funny, you talked about mummy issues. I mean, well, granted, I may have a couple of mummy issues, although my situation was totally, totally different.
Mm-hmm.
My mother never raised me.
Mm-hmm.
So my mummy issue is that I've always felt abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's where I'm coming with that. But it kind of relates to the self-worth,
mm-hmm.
and what I was feeling, and,
mm-hmm.
and when I did the art therapy, well, that helped me bring that a whole new sense of awareness, because
wonderful.
I have this inside me and I'm really, really good at tucking stuff away.
Oh, I know.
You know, and what I've made reference to through my time doing this is what I've done with my stuff that that I'm working on as I'm going through, is I put it on a shelf. But when I put it on a shelf, the door is open and I can see it.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot not acknowledge that I have to do that.
Important.
I cannot say no. I'm not going to deal with that.
Because then you're bullshitting yourself.
Yeah, I'm bullshitting myself, exactly. So, but I had to put it on the shelf. But now, by doing the art therapy, I took it off the shelf.
Beautiful.
So, but in the process of that, from that time until now, and now if you ask me what I got out of that, and Maria is my testament to this too, because I've said it in a group, is that what I've got through that whole process is what it allowed me to do was it allowed me to forgive myself to a certain degree. So if you ask me what I've got out of the year,
wonderful.
Well, I haven't, you know, I mean, I can't believe I'm even saying this. But the thing is that surprises me most is I haven't even realized that I had. And the only reason why I'm able to come to this deduction in regards to myself is by the things that I'm doing. And here I'm not trying to pat myself in the back. I'm just talking about the cognitive things I've done for myself and being self-aware and being mindful and pausing when I get stupid with my thoughts,
mm-hmm.
you know. But the fact that it was there and I never even saw it, it was kind of mind-blowing. And I'm sitting there in a group and I had this epiphany and realized, oh, my God, I don't think like that anymore.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
You know, like, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying I'm healed, and no, but that's what I'm saying. But I'm just so people understand. But what I'm getting at is that I have a whole new sense of awareness, which I never thought possible.
Can I jump in?
Yeah, by all means.
And what's the first step in affecting change? Awareness.
Awareness, exactly.
So, you know, you can say what you want, but I found with myself too, Stuart, it's not until I become awareness and aware of things that I can affect change.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all right. Paul will be right back because I think his ride's going to come here. So I'm probably going to get him to come back here in a minute, just do a closing sign off here. But anyway, folks, so that's kind of where I'm talking about with myself is concerned. Now, I don't know if you're out there listening and you've done any sort of type of healing for yourself and understand the process, well, at a peer level, anyway, it actually doesn't even have to be a peer level. It could be you going to a therapist or to a psychologist, psychiatrist. It doesn't really matter. A whole part of healing, what I've really, really learned, especially with the time that I've had here now in the healing process, is that everything takes time. And Paul pointed this out earlier when we were talking about that. You heal in your own time.
Yes.
And, you know, it doesn't help when you've basically been stuck with the same thoughts for as long as you can remember, and I honestly believe that the longer you've been stuck with those thoughts, it's like anything, like it's kind of like if you glued something and nailed it tight, it's going to be that way. If it's still that way 50 years or 100 years after, it's going to stay that way for another 50, 100 years, unless you make a change to change it. And basically what I've done for myself, as Paul has done for himself, and forgive my analogy that I may use here in this conversation, but I basically put a crowbar in there and I pried those nails and wood up there, and I've become free in a lot of senses. I haven't become completely free, but I have this awareness, and I actually said the word forgiveness, which is
incredible.
Which is incredible because to me it's always been BS or bullshit, as I like to make reference to. Because one thing is I have nothing to forgive. Well, I certainly do not forgive my perpetrators. I'm not even talking about them to begin with. We're talking about ourselves, myself. So if I forgive myself, that allows me to do a lot of things which I never thought possible. Well, it opens up the door, or as an analogy I made, that I'm lifting up the 2x4, basically. To fix it or to rebuild it or to go whatever direction I may want to go. But the point being is that being aware of that has brought me to another level, which I never thought possible. It's funny, you know how I always talk about when Jay's around, Maria's, mm-hmm. I talk about getting a shovel and putting grease on it
mm-hmm.
for people that are stuck.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's kind of what I did for myself.
You know it.
You know? And it is definitely possible that anybody who says you can't do that, I say is bullshit.
Yes, you're only stopping yourself. You're limiting beliefs. There's one of your limiting beliefs.
You're limiting your beliefs. You know. And if you keep believing that, then that's exactly what's going to happen. So I'm giving you an example of where I believed it, but without thinking about it and realizing it, after talking about what my experiences and going through and going through the processes. That a person can change.
You know.
And I didn't even see it.
You know what I call those ones, those moments?
What's that?
Going through your gateless gate.
That's a great way of looking at it.
I love that. It's along your path, you're going to come up to a gateless gate.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say gateless gate, it means there's no gate there
other
than the ones our own limiting thoughts and our own minds put up.
Yeah.
And along the way, you're stuck.
Yeah.
And it's funny, the key to go through that gate can come from anywhere.
Yeah.
It can come from something you read. It can come from a text or a Twitter feed, you know, that somebody says something.
Yeah.
So something that makes that light bulb go off, like you had with you, that when you're doing the art.
Yeah.
Here was your key. You did the art therapy, right?
Yeah.
And boom, that key came.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, that gate disappears.
Yeah.
You've opened that gate and you've moved further along your path. And that's so wonderful to see. I want to give you a hug.
Yeah.
You're doing amazing, man.
Thank you. But you see, folks, this is what I'm trying to get at. Yeah, I know Paul's going to go. So, what, you got 2 minutes, 3 minutes?
I got 2 minutes.
2 minutes.
Two minutes.
So, actually, how about I leave it at that? And if you have any closing moments or anything closing you want to say before, we're going into another year, right?
Yeah, I want to hear from you, man.
No, this
is like a really great, like, you know, we've been on this path together and apart. And together and apart, and it's amazing and amazing to see, brother. All I'm going to say this for 2017, survivors out there, we're losing the stigma around it. Let's get some help. You know, I want to be open about who I am and what I've gone through. And I'm hoping that openness will allow other survivors to see that we can talk about it. We can seek help, and it can change our lives. We're saving lives, man. So that's what I hope for 2017, that age goes lower, that we do get through to the politicians and the people, and I don't understand why they don't want to talk about this stuff, because it's about the silence and stealing the voice from children.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, come on, politicians. Let's teach our children that they can talk about stuff, that they don't have to suppress.
In the stigmas.
That they don't have to be stigmatized, that they don't have to be this weird, interesting, I'm going to say for lack of a dirty word, you know, views of male masculinity. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's teach our boys and our children.
Girls, too.
That's what I'm saying, all our children.
Yeah.
that we can have a voice and we can talk and that nobody has the right to do that to you. And you're not in trouble.
Mm.
You're not at wrong. You're not in trouble.
It's not our fault.
It's not their fault.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, because that's what our perpetrators use on
yeah.
us.
Yeah.
I remember mine. If you tell anybody,
yeah.
this is gonna, you're going to be in so much trouble, they're going to take you to jail.
Yeah.
Right? If you do. And, you know, and if you, and that gets worse and escalates. Mm. You know, I'll kill your dog. I'll kill your mother. Mm. I'll kill this or whoever do you love. Anything they can do to keep us without voice.
Mm.
So let's teach the children that that's not going to happen.
If they talk about it.
They can talk about it. Mm. That's not going to happen.
Mm.
Right? And let them reach out for help.
Mm.
That's what I hope for 2017, that that age that we see going down
yeah.
goes down even further and further and further
oh, yeah.
and further
yeah.
until we got 7 and 8 year olds talking about this
yeah.
and it's not happening anymore because
yeah.
they know they don't have to put up with it.
And they don't have to worry about being
right.
retribution. If
yeah,
they
you
have
got it. It. You
yeah.
got it.
Yeah.
You know, these perpetrators that bully these children, there's a special place in hell for you, dudes.
Yeah.
Right?
And
let's teach the children that they don't have to be bullied.
They have the right to be safe.
You got it.
You know, just like
you
and I.
It. Absolutely.
You know, but our children do.
A shout out. Happy 2017 to all the listeners out there. Thank you so for doing this radio show, and I'll come and talk on it anytime you want.
I really appreciate
it.
I coming
love what you're doing here, man.
Thank
you're
you.
You're saving lives.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, brother. You have a good one.
Later. You too.
And we'll talk in the new year.
I only wish that I could stay here for the whole 2 hours,
well,
man.
We'll get you in the new year.
I forgot how much I love this. So. Next time, yeah, I won't tell my ride to come at 8:30 or 8. I'll tell him to come at 9:30.
Anyway, thanks, Paul.
All right.
We have Paul Dunn, the coordinator of men's and co-ed, rather phase 2 coordinator of the men, of the Gatehouse.
Yes, you got it.
And thank you for coming by.
Thank you for having me, Stuart.
Okay, take care, right. brother.
Talk to you later.
Yeah, okay, safe drive.
Everybody Paul. Out there, have a great 2017. Happy holidays and be safe.
Thanks, Paul.
Talk to you later.
So I was so grateful to have Paul here with us here tonight and talking. And, you know, it's always nice to get, you know, to get, well, someone else's experience. I mean, it's great that I'm lucky and grateful to be here talking about it. But it's nice to have somebody else as well, another perspective, talking about childhood sexual abuse or their experiences and their healing. It's so very important to hear so many different perspectives. Because obviously, we're not all coming in from the same place. And it's also really, really important to hear other people, what they've done to change their, well, change their thought process to better themselves or to heal. To me, that's been a great help for me. Not only hearing, well, obviously hearing their travesties, but also hearing their practices, their self-practices on how they're helping themselves to heal and move forward past their trauma they received as a child. Now, Paul and I had some really, really good conversation here, and I wish he had been able to stay a little bit longer. But the idea of what I've talked about is about, you know, about us being right. Well, we have a right to be safe. So kind of that's been kind of my theme tonight, and kind of things that we've been talking, or rather that Paul and I were talking about, kind of leading up to that. I mean, even as an adult, yes, I'm not a child anymore, and neither was Paul. I mean, we're here, we are, we're adults, but... You know, Paul talked about his mummy issues. I mean, I did to a certain degree, although our experiences are totally, totally different. And yet we shared it. But the point being is, even as an adult, we cannot feel safe about talking about what we're talking about. Not only you don't have to be a child to not feel safe, but even as an adult, you would feel not safe about talking about childhood sexual abuse. And we still have to worry about the stigmas such as being bullied, being judged, actually probably being the biggest thing, shamed, you know, all these things come into play, even as an adult talking about this. So it's necessary, even as an adult, I mean, probably even more so, obviously, but I mean, it'd be great as a child if you've been through this experience and you have a safe place to talk about it. Well, there's not really a whole lot of safe places to talk about it. Granted, here at the Gatehouse, sad as I am to say and talk about, well, we have a special room here in the house where the police come, and it doesn't matter what police department, whether it be the Toronto Police or Peel, York Region, Durham, OPP, RCMP, they're all welcome to come here and do
child interviews and that have been abused. And it does happen here. I'm not saying all the police forces I mentioned, but they're all welcome to come here and do that. Primarily the Toronto police come here and use this for investigation. So we have Toronto police and CSA coming here and conducting the interviews of children that have been abused. And by doing so, which I know I've talked about this before, but this is very pertinent to what I'm talking about now, is that when they come here, it's safe for the children to come here, because when you come in here, it's not like if you follow me on Twitter, I'm always posting pictures of what the gatehouse looks like, even on the inside, never mind the outside. It's a very, very, well, it doesn't look like a hospital. It doesn't look like a police station, that's for sure. It certainly doesn't look like CSA. It doesn't look like a probation board, like if you're going to an office. It doesn't look like a medical clinic. It doesn't look like any of those things at all. You go upstairs, and the interview room is basically like, to me, I would look at it as being like a great example, which I know I posted pictures on it before, but it kind of reminds me of like just going over to my bedroom or to a friend's house, going up into a room, and you're just playing. It's full of toys. But in the room, for example, they've got a hidden camera, and they have a couple of hidden microphones. And this is all part of the police investigator and CSA doing their report, so that when they do this initial report on video and audio, that this way the child does not have to go to court and the child does not have to get put through this kind of stress when it does finally go to the courts. And you know, bringing a child into a courtroom setting over something like this, the child abuse was traumatic enough. So, but doing this, that would be like basically, well, would be like reliving the whole experience all over again if they had to go through this court experience. And another great example where I can use that as an example or as a picture of a man or a woman going into a courtroom, and they're not even children anymore, and the prosecutor goes up to you and basically tells you you're lying to your face that this never happened to you. Well, this sort of thing doesn't happen to a child. They come here, they do they make their deposition, and they do not have to appear in court, and therefore they're not susceptible to this type of re-victimizing all over again. I won't get into a court system and how flawed I think it is, but or pass any my personal opinions. All I know is that it's a complicated, and certainly I'm not authority on it, but only going by what I've seen and what I've heard, it's very complicated, and it ought not to be, but yet it is. You'd think that when you go to court, where you've been where you're the victim, you would think it would be there would be more empathy involved, but empathy only falls into place only to a certain degree, and only with actually, let me rephrase that. Empathy only falls within the guidelines of the law that's in place. And with saying so, this allows both the prosecution and the defense to go at it with guns blazing, and sometimes that's not always, that's not beneficial especially to the victim, and it's totally unfair. I won't get into a whole lot more about that, but I'm just pointing it out that that's what it really is, what it's like. I know that in this province in particular, and I can't really talk about the other ones, but I know that in Ontario, the court system is very complicated. It's long, or rather it can be very long and complicated, and also very, very expensive. I know that Ontario, Canada, and British Columbia, Canada are, they're probably the most expensive court systems, in Canada anyway. I won't say the world, but they are very complicated. And, they seem like they are from my perspective. But nevertheless, my point being is that they're complicated and they're long drawn and they're also very expensive. So therefore, when you're going through the court system, you might want to keep a lot of these things in mind and make sure you have a lot of questions to ask your lawyer before going so, because if not, you could be burned, never mind financially, but emotionally as well. So you need to think really, really closely and carefully that what you're doing, that you have all your T's crossed and all your I's dotted, and you have good, make sure your lawyer's got some experience, and you've got good evidence to prove your whatever you're trying to prove, and then you move forward with that. Other than that, I can't really discuss a whole lot more about it. All I know is that the court system is what it is, and I'm neither – my comments I'm making, I'm neither judging nor – I'm not judging it at all, if pardon the way I'm putting that, but pardon the pun if I could put it that way too. But all I'm saying is that it's complicated, and you need to think about what you're doing and what you're getting yourself into is all I'm saying. The court system is it is what it is, and until things change as far as victims' rights are concerned, I really don't know what's going to happen over the next years. Hopefully, over the next years, hopefully the province and the federal government can will tough it up to sentences for childhood sex abusers. You know, I've talked about Gordon Sutcliffe, for example, a great example, over 100 boys. Like, that's insane. You know, so he gets 6 years. So meanwhile, all these other 100 boys, for example, are basically stuck with it for the rest of their lives. That's like a life sentence. Like, they'll never, you know, like even for myself, I was never abused by this man. Yet, for what happened to me, I'm basically stuck with it all my life now. There's not a day goes by I don't have a flashback. There's not a day that, you know, that my PSC doesn't kick in. You know, I'm constantly trying to fix myself so I don't have to think of those thoughts. And, you know, as making comments to what I was making about before, you know, I've been, well, stuck with this basically all my life, you know, and just because I come to a place like the Gatehouse, for example, and they tell me, and even other people tell me, well, I've had all kinds of, never mind the Gatehouse, outside the Gatehouse, I should say, is where, you know, where I have said this, and people will say, well, keep your chin up, you're a man, you can take it like a man, and, you know, that it's all those kind of stigmas that are, well, bullshit as far as I'm concerned, but nevertheless, they're said, and they're still being said, not just to me, but to others as well, whether you're male or female. But my point being is, just because somebody tells you, okay, well, you don't think that way because that's BS, right? Well, if you've been thinking like that for a long, long time from a traumatic experience, I don't care what you say. It's just not that simple. You know, I'm basically having to teach myself all over again. Well, not so much teach myself all over again, but, I guess in a sense I have. I'm teaching myself that those intrusive thoughts that I have are BS. And as I was talking about, like in my personal growth for the year, as Paul talked about as well for his personal growth, you know, I feel that I seem necessary and really, really necessary that I talk about this stuff. So you survivors that are out there listening to me and Paul here tonight, they'll understand that, yeah, well, this is normal. This is what we go through. It's just a question of what we do with that new sense of awareness that I've talked about for myself and for Paul as well, about moving forward. It's just not that easy. Well, it takes a lot of work. I know that what I had to do to try to transform this year, I had to do those things I talked about. And Paul did as well. You know, it was a tough journey, and I'm still in this journey, and I really encourage anybody who is going through this journey, and I know there's a hell of a lot, people are going through a hell of a lot more worse than I'll ever think about going through. I know that right off the hop, and I couldn't imagine. But the point being is that by example, like I'm making for myself, like about being aware, that has been a big factor of helping me to move forward so I don't fall back so much. So folks, if you're going to take anything away today for what I've said and Paul have said, hopefully giving you some kind of hope that some things can change. And granted, and what I mean by some things can change, it obviously meant that Paul and myself, we had to put an awful lot of, well, work into it, to ourselves. I mean, it's very easy for me, and I can't speak for others, and I mean, Paul even talked about himself, it's very easy to fall back in a hole. And I can stay there. I'm quite comfortable being there because I've really, to be honest with you, for more years than I can recall, that's always been a comfortable spot for me to go. It's easy for me just to, you know, once I'm triggered or something happens where I feel that, where that self-worth thing I talked about, for example, where I'm not worthy of that kind of thing, it's just as easy for me just to, you know, like I'll slip out the back door, Jack, and I'm gone. And granted, that's running away and that's BS, but that's how I've dealt with everything. You know, whenever I felt where I wasn't wanted or needed, then that was my safety or my scapegoat, just to walk away. That includes relationships. That includes everything, you know, in my personal life. So it was much easier to isolate myself versus actually having to deal with it or challenge something like that. It was much easier for me just to walk away. Well, I've learned from this summer that, yes, well, that still applies in some cases where you walk away for something that you don't feel safe and you don't feel comfortable being around.
Excuse me.
Where you need to, if you stay there in this environment, well, it's going to bring you down more. It's going to put you back to the Stone Ages, if I can put it there. But this sense of awareness that I talked about for myself and that Paul talked about, well, this helps us in the future for moving forward. It helps us not fall back into relationships, whether it be intimate or non-intimate relationships, where we can converse with people and not worry about what they think or what they say or, you know, anything. So, like, for example, let me give you another example, too. It's like I was saying this tonight. I was talking with some of the people here in the house tonight. I talked about a bowling league that I run. I mean, there's 60 people there. I'm looking after a league of 60 people. And whenever I go there, you know, I know most of the people there. Like, even, like, I mean, I've had beer with them. I've hung out with them. I played baseball with them. But I know I've talked about this before as well, but I need to say this. So you know that maybe you're going through the same thing, and we understand one another, is that you always like to go out to I go there and I have all these people around me. My point being is that I'm there, and yet I have 60 people all around me. Why do I still feel alone? Why do I feel like I want to isolate myself still? Well, it all falls back to what I was talking about from the beginning. You know, one about not having self-worth and, you know, not feeling safe. Well, it's BS. I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's what it amounts to. And this is what I've realized. And whenever I do get into that mode now, like, I'm really, really fighting hard to, not so much I'm trying to fit in. It's not about trying to fit in. Well, yeah, of course you're trying to fit in to a certain degree, but the idea is that I go in there and I feel comfortable. I don't have to worry that I'm not worried about, you know, I mean, the last thing I'm worried about, I mean, I'm not worried about them talking about what happened to me as a child and all the other stuff. I'm not, that's not it. It's just my own negative thoughts, thinking that I'm not a good person and I'm not worthy. I don't deserve to have friends, and realizing that that's just BS. That is what I'm talking about as far as awareness is concerned. Okay. There's a couple of points here. The flower child has brought to me here. Survivors have a lot of tension in their body and blocked energy that must be released for good health. You're absolutely right on that one. And don't let pop-up psychologists make you feel like failure if you cannot shut off a negative thoughts like any that you're going through. And yes, you're absolutely right. I don't have a whole lot of my experience with psychiatrists and psychologists. Well, they weren't great experiences, and that's probably why I have a phobia of going to a doctor today, because I just don't trust them. But many, many, many years ago, I'm going to make this short and sweet, but many, many, many years ago, I tried to commit suicide. And within doing so, I brought this upon to myself. So basically, they commit me for 30 to 60 days, and they give me shock treatment, and they give me full of pills. So in that time, and actually that happened to me twice, that's how bad I was and where I was going. And may I point out too, that in these times that I've done this, they had no idea that I was abused, sexually abused, because I was afraid to talk about it. And they always thought it was something to do with family. Well, it was to a certain degree, but that really wasn't all of it. That really wasn't the bulk of it. I mean, never mind my abandonment issues with my father and my mother, and whatever, but my real problem was what was happening to me as a child. That's what I was carrying to me, because I was getting nightmares all the time. I was having flashbacks, and I would zone out so bad sometimes, because my body was going into trauma, remembering what happened to me, like when I was sodomized, for example. Just horrible, horrible thoughts and dreams and stuff. So therefore, I wanted to do that, and therefore, so my point being is, why I don't trust doctors. That's why I don't trust doctors is and what happened to me. And again, another example of being aware and realizing that it's BS. Because if I don't take care of myself, well, who the hell is later on, especially if it's something serious, right? But don't get, but I still have that phobia of going to doctors. But I'm talking about really about trusting people in general. Well, that's really, really, really hard when you don't trust yourself. So when I talked about forgiveness earlier, that's now how that's now allowed me to actually, I think it's allowed me to trust people a little bit better. Well, not just trusting people, but trusting myself a little bit better. And I think that's a good thing because by doing so, it's allowing me to, well, so it's, I'm opening up my neural pathways here. You know, this is all part of neuroplasticity and false beliefs and intrusive thoughts and, you know, my intrusive thoughts and being able to change that, changing my narrative to, well, realizing and understanding that I don't have to think this way because it's not really true without dragging it through the mud anymore. But these things, I know that when you're trying to discover these things, I know that when I came here, I did the phase one program, I did the phase two program. Well, I had to process all this stuff and all these feelings and that self-awareness of self-worth was one of the things in my pile of stuff that I had to sort out. And one of these things as the analogy I made about putting it on the shelf, I never really, I put it aside, but I acknowledged it, but I didn't acknowledge it. So in other words, I would escape and do other things and not really deal with it. And I put it on the shelf. And by going into art therapy, as I've talked about, it was my only way that I could actually deal with it because I didn't really know how to even talk about that. I mean, yeah, I don't feel like I'm worthy. And what else can I say? You know, well, I have no self-worth. Well, why? Well, because of what happened to you. Well, okay, but that was then. This is now. Well, okay, then why am I still carrying this? Why do I choose to hold on to that? Why do I feel that it's a comfort zone for me? Well, not really. It's, well, yeah, it's comfort in my own intrusive thought, but in reality, it's not. So if it's easier for me just to go back to my room or to my apartment, actually my house, go back to my house, and I'm just going to go in the basement, and I'm going to get on social media, and I can just hide all what I'm thinking and feeling, and everything's going to be all right. Well, that's not really, it's not really any good. It wasn't any good for me. So by doing what I did, it was probably the best thing I did, and it gave me a sense of, obviously a greater sense of awareness, as I pointed out, but the best thing is that as I've described, and it really irks me to even say this, but I have some kind of a forgiveness towards myself. And again, I'll reiterate, nothing to do with my perpetrators. I'm not even talking about them. I'm talking about for myself. In the healing, folks, if you're listening to me, is the big factor about moving forward. If you can forgive yourself to any degree or whatever level of degree, then you're off to a good race. You know, I'm really excited now to see what my year has in store for me now that these things have come to me. I'm sure I'm going to have some setbacks, but that's not really going to stop me from doing what I'm doing because I just keep doing it. And I love the fact that I can even sit here and even talk about it. And I don't know. I'm hoping that that my hope will give you hope and sort of pass it on down the line. Well, folks, it's been a really, really good year doing this. I've had some good shows. I've had some bad ones. But I would say the majority of the ones I've done, I've had some really, really good guests come on here. I did not even accomplish anywhere near that I wanted to get accomplished. I wanted to start doing video production. I did one, and the video production part wasn't very good, but the audio quality was very good. There's one I did with Lacey from Full Circle Art, and she's a lady that does – actually, she's a qualified – art therapist. And here we are talking about we have no therapist on us. Well, we do, but what Lacey teaches when she does the art therapy, which I've talked about before, she does it on a peer level. She doesn't do it on a, well, there's a certain amount of therapy involved in there as well, but it's basically put across on a peer level versus a therapeutic level. There is bits and pieces of her being a therapist in there, but it's basically at a peer level that it's put out there. And it's the idea of doing and talking, and that's kind of how I did it for myself. You know, a wonderful lady. But anyway, back to what I'm saying is that even Lisa and we did a segment on abandonment, and the video quality was horrible, but the audio was great. So I'm hoping that in the new year, now that I've got this software, I'm gonna edit it, get rid of the video, and just do the audio, and I'll release it as a podcast on Blog Talk here on Personal Transformation. But folks, it's been a wonderful year. I've learned an awful lot. I've had tremendous growth. I really appreciate any input that you, my listeners out there, have given back to me. And thank you, Flower Child. You've been probably one of my biggest fans here. So I really appreciate what you've your comments and your thoughts. And thank you. Happy New Year to you as well, and everybody who's listening. And Merry Christmas. And thank you for your good thoughts, Flower Child. I really, really appreciate it. Deeply appreciate that. And yes, I am the only Canadian show that's talking about childhood sexual abuse. I know there's a couple others around the world, one of them being in the UK, but which I haven't heard in quite a while. But and in the US, I'm not so sure about either. But I know that I should do some mentions quickly before I go as well. Like for example, like I hang around on Twitter. I really don't do a whole lot on Facebook. But for example, like there's some great chat groups on there. Like if you're a survivor of childhood sexual abuse, well, I can talk about Rachel Thompson. Bobby and Athena, the three of them, Rachel and Bobby were the original ones to start Sex Abuse Chat, which is just over 2 years ago. So if you go on Tuesdays, for example, at the 9 o'clock Pacific Standard Time, it'd be 6 o'clock Pacific Time and 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, you can get support there. And it doesn't cost you a dime. You go on there, and it's co-ed, and there's some great conversation goes on there. There's great support there. And that's with Rachel and Bobby on Tuesdays. And on Mondays, by the way, Rachel and Bobby were the first ones to start this just over 2 years ago. They're the only ones I'm aware of that started this through Twitter anyway. And it's still going on today. Great support. And then Bobby and Athena started doing No More Shame, which is on Mondays. And then there's also there's also a chat as well in the UK as well, which is like 1 o'clock on 1 o'clock would be Eastern Standard Time, which would be, I believe, 4 or 5 hours difference in the UK. And so they support survivors in the UK as well. So these ladies, to say, you know, I can't say enough about them, give great support to the community, whether you're a man or a woman. And they've been on now for quite a while, a couple of years, and they keep on giving out support. You know, there's other means of support you can get through social media as well. If you're suffering from post-traumatic stress, if you're suffering from bipolar disorder, if you're suffering, rather you've been through a relationship where your relationship was a narcissist or domestic violence, domestic abuse. There's all these types of support through social media that you can get, which does not cost you a dime. Yes, some of it does. And you want to do your research and check it out before you even get yourself into it. And the best thing about it is you can be anonymous about it. You don't even have to give your name. You know, you go in there and you can talk about your stuff that's going on with you, and you can get really, really good input. And that includes Bobby, Rachel, and Athena, like I'm talking about, example as well. And, you know, it's a great place to talk, and it's a great, it's safe too. It's speaking about, you have the right to be safe. Well, that's another place you have the right to be safe, even on social media. And it's very well moderated and watched, so that if any idiot gets on there and starts bashing you or somebody else, well, the community is so tight knit and they're watching. So basically any idiot gets on there, they'll shut them down. And I've seen this happen before where somebody's gone in there and they start talking stuff that they don't know what they're talking about, or they're making some rude comment towards one of the participants that might be on there. And they basically, people like, I won't say any names, but people that are watching, and they'll basically cut you off. They'll block you right away. They'll block you and you can't partake in the conversation and where it's safe. So it was really good that we have that kind of people watching as well, so that you can go in there and feel safe. Now, you can even go on to Facebook, for example. They have private chat groups there as well. I know there's even private chats you can do through Twitter as well, but there's private chats you can go through on Facebook as well. And all those things I'm talking about, which I've talked about, childhood sexual abuse, you know, if you got bipolar disorder, PTSD, you know, you're a survivor of narcissistic domestic abuse, there is chat groups out there that you can go on there and you can get good peer support. And there's even therapists as well that you can either pay, and some of them you don't have to pay, where you can get help. And especially if you have no way of getting out of your home, or you have no way of going around, depending where you live in the country, the world, it doesn't really matter. These people are out there to help, and they're putting themselves out there. All I say is a great round of applause to the people I'm talking about. They know who are, they know who you are. Or rather, you know who you are. I'm talking about you now. And there's not enough can be said to thank you and to give you gratitude enough for what you're doing out there for other people. So thank you, folks, greatly. And now, Flower Child, you have a couple more comments to things you've said. And okay. Yes, thank you for that, Flower Child. I'm definitely the only one. And Happy New Year. Okay, so I've covered everything. And without making myself sound any more silly than I am right at the moment. But, folks, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you. I have a lot of things that are going to be coming up the new year. I have some exciting things that are coming up for myself as well. I'm looking forward to, like, January the 25th. Paul and I were talking with students, and I have this this form, this AIDS and child abuse form, which I'm going to be going to over at York University on January 25th. And I get to be a moderator of, there's going to be about 100 to 150 students. I'm so, so looking forward to this, because I get to ask the forum, the panels, the questions, and I get to moderate this. So I'm so excited about this. And you know me, how I love to talk. So this will be fantastic. Although it won't be me doing all the talking. I'll be the one asking the questions. So I'll be the one watching the clock and doing this. So I'm really, really excited to hear what these students have come up with and what they're doing and what they're studying. This is part of their social studies. So thank you, Professor Peter Dawson. I'm looking forward to that. So this is one little thing I've got looking forward to coming up in January. There's a few other things that are going to be happening as well, which I'll be talking about, which I'll talk about in the new year. But that's the closest thing I've got coming up, and I'm really, really looking forward to it. I just finished a group with Deb, which I've had her on here before, Deb Mayberry. She's also the author, Unlock the Door Beyond Sexual Abuse. If you go on Amazon.ca, you can find that. My story's in there, along with many other stories of survivors of childhood sexual abuse. And a great book if you need insight for yourself, and you could see what other survivors are going through. If you're a survivor, it's a great book, and so you'll know you're not alone. But anyway, I say there's an exciting year coming up, lots of stuff going on. But folks, take care of yourself through the Christmas holidays. As I've stated, it's not my favorite time of the year. I'm trying really, really, really hard that I don't fall into that little hole, which I love so much to do. If you need to chat, well, I'll be there too, because I'll be in the same place. Hopefully I won't be so deep in the hole this year, but as I'm going to strive not to be, and to try to have a little bit more cheersome about myself, and pass on that energy to others, and hopefully they can take and feed off of that. So folks, wish you a Merry Christmas, wish you a Happy New Year. Thank you for all your listening, all your support that you've done throughout this year, and we'll see you in the new year. So good night, folks, and thank you.